It's a trap!
Hello, and welcome to episode number 77 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. Today, we're going to be continuing our Essential Upgrades podcast series.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, we released a show where we talked about some of the most important and influential upgrades from the first four waves or so of X-Wing. And today, our focus will be on the Rebel Aces expansion in Wave 5 through Wave 7.
Yeah, so let's get to it.
If you haven't heard our previous episode, basically what we're going to focus in on today is we're looking at the history of X-Wing and talking about upgrade cards that either are or have been very influential and kind of affected the design of the game and how the game has developed over the years.
Yeah, these are cards that have taken the game from its core release and expanded the game mechanics into new territory.
So starting off here, we're actually going to look at the Rebel Aces expansion. This was the second Aces-type expansion. They are the big-box releases we saw. We got the initial Imperial Aces, and since then we've seen things like Imperial Veterans in the same style. You get a couple ships that already existed and already were released, but with some influential new cards to make those ships a little bit more competitive.
So with Rebel Aces, we got two A-Wing cards that really pushed the design of the game. So we first got Shardan Refit, a missile upgrade card that costs -2 points. A-Wing only, and reads, this card has a negative squad point cost.
This card's really interesting because it's the first point recosting we've seen effectively on a ship in X-Wing. Ships like the TIE Interceptor got a big boon with the Royal Guard title in that release, but they still came in at the same point cost. They just had an added benefit. Now we're actually seeing something here that changes the actual squad point cost of a ship, which had not been seen before up to this point in the game.
Yeah, and moving forward, many more Aces or Veterans packs would include recosting upgrade cards. We saw it with the TIE X7 title, and now coming up, the Star Viper Mark II title are both squad point reduction cards. And the Shardan Refit is really what started it all. It's the first card to address that ships, perhaps with all their upgrade bars, were overcosted to accommodate for their upgrade potentials.
Well, and this also speaks to one of the early problems I think the designers encountered in the game, which is kind of the limitation of two attack dice ships. There were only two factions at this point in the game's history, and both of them had their kind of agile, quick-moving ship. The Imperials obviously had the TIE Interceptor, and the Rebels had the A-Wing. The big problem was the Interceptor was outclassing the A-Wing in most regards. They could both token up on defense very effectively with access to a focus and an evade, so Push the Limit became a pretty common staple card for both of these ships, but the TIE Interceptor had a big advantage in that it had native 3 attack dice.
Which meant that the costing of the A-Wing just didn't hold up with that primary weapon value of 2. It just needed to be more of a swarm ship, so the lower point cost adjusted for that. As well, we also got the A-Wing Test Pilot.
Yeah, this addressed kind of another issue that the A-Wing had. Like I said before, Push the Limit was effectively a staple card on this ship, which meant that it always consumed your elite pilot talent slot. This isn't so much a problem for ships like the Interceptor, which has the native 3 attack dice and the ability to take 2 mod slots.
Well, and the other thing against the A-Wing was its pilots had traditionally lower pilot skill than the TIE Interceptors. Tycho comes in at 8, whereas Soontir was at 9. And then with Imperial Aces, they also got Karner Jaxx at 8. And the top 2 A-Wings, yeah, were at 8 or 7. So the A-Wing Test Pilot, an A-Wing-only title for 0 points, reads, your upgrade bar gains 1 Elite Pilot Talent upgrade icon. You cannot equip 2 of the same Elite Pilot Talent upgrade cards, and you cannot equip this card if your pilot skill value is 1 or less.
So A-Wings, before this title card, were at a distinct disadvantage against Interceptors because of that pilot skill problem. The A-Wing's still a very maneuverable ship, but if you're coming in at a pilot skill just below the Interceptors, they were going to be able to very effectively arc-dodge you. We saw in the release of Rebel Aces a really cool new pilot called Jake Farrell, but he came in at pilot skill 7, which was not enough to beat out ships like Karner Jaxx or Soontir Fel. Thanks to the A-Wing Test Pilot title, now you could equip not only Push the Limit, but also Veteran Instincts to increase those pilot skills by 2. So suddenly, there was a more level playing field for these ships compared to the Interceptors.
Well, and down the road, we would see the A-Wing Test Pilot be used to great effect with the pilots kill three Green Squadron A-Wings, combining not push the limit with another elite pilot talent, but two different combinations of elite pilot talents. We saw Snapshot and Crackshot or Juke be used to great effect, where you get your Snapshot and then another elite pilot talent that allows you some pseudo modification on the attack that gets around the restrictions of not being able to modify your attack with Snapshot.
And A-Wings have kind of jumped around as to whether or not they've been competitively viable. The more recent trend is that they are not, mostly due to that two attack dice limitation. But cool synergies like the Crackshot, Snapshot stuff has kept them alive, and at least in the players' minds.
Well, the point is, combining two elite pilot talents is a very crazy power to have, where there's just so many possibilities for really powerful synergies that so many other ships would love to take advantage of. But this ability is balanced on the ineffective chassis of the A-Wing, where because it just has that limited primary weapon value, there is only so much value you can get out of it.
And of course, looking at the game as a whole, we can't discount the fact that these two cards in particular kind of broadened our perspective on what a quote-unquote fix could be for a ship, because these are pretty wide-sweeping, powerful effects. So following up, Rebel Aces was the release of Wave 5 on November 26, 2014. We saw a couple very influential cards. This wave is actually the smallest wave in X-Wing history. It's comprised of just the YT-2400 Outrider as well as the VT-49 Decimator. It's also interesting in that at a time when a lot of competitive players were kind of annoyed by the effectiveness of large base turrets like the Millennium Falcon, we saw the release of two more large base turreted ships.
Right, and the first upgrade card I want to talk about is one that took the large base turreted ship to a whole new level.
We had in the YT-2400 expansion the Outrider title card. This is a 5-point title for the YT-2400 that reads, "While you have a cannon upgrade card equipped, you cannot perform primary weapon attacks, and you may perform cannon secondary weapon attacks against ships outside of your firing arc." Effectively, this turns your cannon slot upgrade into a turret upgrade, with some distinct limitations.
So this was particularly abused when you took the heavy laser cannon. Other cannons have, you know, perhaps range 1 to 3, and so there's no range where you can't fire. But the value of taking the Outrider card was the ability to roll 4 attack dice at range 2 to 3, where your opponent's not getting that powerful of attacks back at you because of a range bonus, and then you're denying their range bonus on defense because you are rolling a cannon, and then you're getting 4 dice on all of your attacks.
Yeah, and I think that's a very specific point I want to reiterate, too, is that at the time, the standard for power we saw on turrets was the Millennium Falcon going out to range 3 with 3 attack dice. But even then, if the Millennium Falcon's shooting at range 3, you're obviously getting that extra die on defense. Whereas not only does the Outrider allow you to roll 4 attack dice, which was kind of a new power threshold for attack dice, it also negated that defensive bonus. So suddenly these 1 or 2 agility ships that would benefit a lot from rolling an additional agility die were being denied that at range 3. And Dash Rendar was pretty effective right from the get-go. We saw a lot of great synergies, and throughout the game's history, different variations of Dash in the YT-2400 with the heavy laser cannon have been a recurring force in the X-Wing metagame.
And this is just one of the examples where Whisper had already been released, so 4 attack dice attacks were a thing, but the Outrider title just made it more prevalent, and now we have 4 attack dice being rolled on a turreted ship, which means every turn it's getting shots, unless, of course, everything's at range 1 of it. So then moving on to our next upgrade card for Wave 5. This is, I think, the upgrade card that has pushed efficiency the most out of any upgrade card in the game. The drawbacks are very real, but I think the output you get from this one upgrade card has yet to be paralleled. Lone Wolf, the 2-point elite pilot talent, reads, "When attacking or defending, if there are no other friendly ships at range 1 to 2, you may reroll one of your blank results."
So comparing this one to other elite pilot talents that existed at the time of Lone Wolf's release, the most powerful effects were pretty well established. We had Veteran Instincts increasing your pilot skill by 2 for a single squad point. Then we also had the card Push the Limit, which gave you a lot of action economy. Now, if you had a ship that couldn't use Push the Limit very well, the other elite pilot talent standard was Predator, which was a 3-point elite pilot talent that lets you reroll attack dice, either 1 or 2, depending on the pilot skill of your target. Lone Wolf took that kind of to a new level at a slightly lower point cost.
Right. So this is 1 point cheaper than both Predator and Push the Limit, and you're getting benefits on both offense or defense. So usually with Predator, you're taking an action besides target lock. So you're getting like a mini target lock plus whatever your normal action was. And here, Lone Wolf is, in many cases, the same. You are limited to just rerolling blanks, but because of the wording, you're more likely to take that focus action so that the only dice you do need to reroll are the blank results.
And abilities that modify attack dice are very common in X-Wing, but the abilities that modify defense dice are far less common, particularly rerolling defense dice. There are just a handful of cards that allow you to do that.
Right. Well, and so here, Lone Wolf's efficiency is about the same as Predator's, where you're getting about the same offensive output. It's not quite as good as Predator, but it is 1 point cheaper. But then also you get this massive defensive bonus that is unprecedented on Elite Pilot Talents. Push the Limit can give you access to two defensive tokens, but if you're being shot at two, three, four, five times a turn, Push the Limit's defense is going to be not enough, whereas Lone Wolf is going to give you a defensive advantage on every shot that's coming at you. And this is really the first we've seen of recursive defensive bonuses on Elite Pilot Talent upgrade. And it's a very powerful effect.
And it's proven its worth several times over. One of the key downsides, though, of Lone Wolf is obviously you can't have other friendly ships at or within range 2. So typically lists that run Lone Wolf will be lists that run fewer total ships, and then you'll often find yourself forced to fly a certain way to accommodate that limitation. That being said, it's proven its worth several times over. It's a very popular choice even nowadays on Outrider, Heavy Laser Cannon, Dash Rendars. And when Manaru and Dengar lists were ruling the world, this was a very popular Elite Pilot talent to run on your Dengar just because you could get defensive rerolls as well as effectively infinite focus tokens with the overclocked Astromech.
Right. It is worth noting that the ships that have abused Lone Wolf the most have also had access to multiple focus tokens a turn. Whether it's the Outrider using Recon Specialist or the Ray Crew card, Kyle Katarn, to get extra focus tokens, or the Jumpmaster 5000 chassis using the overclocked Astromech to give it infinite focus tokens a turn.
After Wave 5, we saw the release of Wave 6 on February 26, 2015. This was a very important wave for a number of reasons. This is where we saw the initial release of the third X-Wing faction, Scum and Villainy, as well as a whole slew of new upgrade cards.
So similar to Push Limit or Veteran Instincts, where the game was just never the same after their release, we got another benchmark in the X-Wing design history in Wave 6. And that was in the Star Viper expansion, better known as the Auto Thrusters expansion that comes with the Star Viper model, for that namesake upgrade card, Auto Thrusters.
Auto Thrusters is a 2-point modification that reads, when defending, if you're inside the attacker's firing arc beyond range 2 or outside the attacker's firing arc, you may change one of your blank results to an evade result. You can equip this card only if you have the boost action icon. So this is a very powerful game effect, and I think it's important to kind of understand the context of why this card was released. At the time, like we said before, there were a lot of large base turreted ships that were kind of dominating the game. You had the Outrider dashes, you had the fat Han Solo builds out there, which made it really difficult for ships like the TIE Interceptor or A-Wing to compete, because a lot of their efficiency comes in the form of their ability to move and arc dodge, which is completely undermined by large base turrets that can reach out to range 3.
Yeah, so when I talked about Lone Wolf and that power of that recursive defensive ability, well, Auto Thrusters is an equal amount of recursion on that defensive ability, but it's a more powerful defensive effect where instead of rerolling a blank result, you just get to turn that blank result into an evade. So very powerful, and it really turned the game and gave those interceptor class ships a way to deal and present a threat to turreted platforms. Where as long as they're able to do what they do best and dodge firing arcs using their boost and barrel roll actions, then they can generally avoid a lot of the damage being dealt back to them with the help from Auto Thrusters.
So when Wave 5 released, Auto Thrusters didn't really have to compete with any other modification upgrades. At the time, there was a pretty limited selection, and Auto Thrusters was far and away the most effective one, especially for A-Wings and TIE Interceptors. Nowadays, we have things like Guidance Chips and Integrated Astromech that can often compete for that Auto Thruster slot. But even now, autothrusters is still one of the most efficient and cost-effective upgrades in the game.
Absolutely. At 2 points, this is a must include for any 3 or potentially 2 agility ships with the boost action.
Yeah, it's a card we basically see stapled to ships like the TIE Interceptor, the Protectorate Starfighter, or the TIE Advanced Prototype.
And we even see it used to great effect on T-70s, where they don't have as much raw defensive output, but their increased hit points and access to regeneration effects means autothrusters does get a lot of value there as well. So autothrusters was very powerful on the ships that could take it, but really how it's shaped the game is now other repositioning aces that don't natively have the boost action, which means they can't take autothrusters, are now at a pretty big disadvantage, where turrets have remained popular choices because of their ability to always have shots. Ships without the autothruster upgrade that do rely on dodging arcs are at a pretty extreme disadvantage, and with the release of twin laser turret, the prevalence of the threat of turrets became more and more powerful. And with the increase in munitions, that range 3 defensive bonus that autothrusters also provides gave some aces an opportunity to weather the storm of munitions. But other aces that couldn't take autothrusters are now at a pretty big disadvantage. Ships like the TIE Advanced or E-Wing that don't natively have the boost action, which means they don't have the upgrade space to take both engine upgrade and autothrusters, puts these ships defensively at quite a big disadvantage.
Well, and autothrusters became more and more necessary, especially in Wave 6, where we started to see the efficiency of attacks start to skyrocket. We had the release of several very important offense-affecting upgrade cards. K4 Security Droid and R4 Agromech were both released, and both have boosted the efficiency of offense in the X-Wing metagame.
Yeah, so K4 Security Droid, a scum-only crew card for 3 points, reads, after executing a green maneuver, you may acquire a target lock.
And R4 Agromech is a 2-point salvaged astromech upgrade that reads, when attacking, after you spend a focus token, you may acquire a target lock on the defender.
So here, these are both ships that are boosting your damage output by giving you access to extra target locks. But more importantly, these ships are boosting your damage output of munitions.
Yeah, I think the initial purpose of R4 Agromech was to help boost the effectiveness of the Blaster Turret upgrade card, which was a 4-point turret upgrade card that lets you roll 3 attack dice, but you had to spend a focus token to shoot it, which meant you didn't really have much offensive modification. R4 Agromech came in, and suddenly when you spent that focus token to shoot that turret, you could get a target lock and then have some offensive modification on that shot. What ended up happening with R4 Agromech is it became a very effective way to boost the efficiency of torpedoes on the contracted scout munition boat.
Right. There was a window of time in X-Wing where you could use a focus from Deadeye to fire a proton torpedo off of your contracted scout. And then the use of that focus token would trigger R4 Agromech, allowing you to acquire a target lock, which you could spend during the attack. And then you would still have the modification of your proton torpedo turning a focus to a crit, and guidance chip turning any result into a hit, which gave your torpedoes around a 97% chance of getting 4 hits.
Which set the damage output threshold at an entirely new level. Now, clearly, 2 attack dice ships were outclassed by volleys that were routinely 4 heavily modified dice. This prompted eventually the FAQ and errata-ing of R4 Agromech so that you couldn't trigger R4 Agromech when the focus was spent to fire a munitions, like with the use of Deadeye, so that it only actually worked if you were spending a focus to modify attack dice.
Right, so 2 nerfs later, R4 Agromech doesn't work with firing munitions with Deadeye, and now Deadeye can only be taken on small base ships, limiting its options to be abused with other upgrade cards. But now many ships still use the K4 security droid as the next best option to set up munitions, where the important thing with munitions is because they cost a decent amount of points, and you only get 1 or 2 uses out of them if you have extra munitions, you really want those attacks to count, and you want to get the maximum number of hits on your munition. And so you really want as many modifications as possible. You need the target lock often to fire the attack, but then you also want a focus token to modify your attack further. And so K4 being a crew option here is actually pretty powerful, where It's giving you access to that target lock, and you still get your elite pilot talent to give you further modification. You could use a Tawny Mind Link to get more focus tokens, or Crackshot to make those attacks count even more, or Veteran Instincts to help you control that range for your munition with your opponent even more.
Well, K4 is really interesting too, because it wasn't that efficient with the ships that were available in Wave 6. It's obviously Scum and Villainy only, so there were just a handful of ships that could actually take this crew on, namely the Fire Spray as well as the Hawk, neither of which have a great selection of free maneuvers. The real star power of K4 is that it is basically a non-action way to take an action. Since you just have to perform a green maneuver, you're acquiring a target lock, not performing a target lock action, which means even if you bump or are stressed when you perform that green maneuver, you're still going to be able to acquire that target lock.
Right, so this makes it really difficult for your opponent to disrupt your ability to fire munitions.
Well, K4 paired really well with another card released in Wave 6, also a salvaged astromech called Unhinged Astromech.
A one-point salvaged astromech that reads, you may treat all three-speed maneuvers as green maneuvers.
So when we saw in Wave 8 the release of the Contracted Scout, which had both access to a crew slot and a salvaged astromech slot, you could generate a really powerful combo by equipping the Unhinged Astromech to turn your three forward and three banks green, as well as K4 Security Droid, where now you can suddenly perform very fast maneuvers and get a target lock modification.
Right, but Unhinged wasn't just powerful on the Jumpmasters. It also revolutionized the Y-Wing dial. This effect of turning certain speed maneuvers to green was not new. It came out in the core release with the R2 Astromech that turns speeds 1 and 2 maneuvers green. But on the Y-Wing dial, at speed 3, you have a red 3 turn, as well as a bunch of white maneuvers. So turning all of those green really dynamically changed the Y-Wing's dial.
Suddenly, it was a much more nimble ship that didn't have such a hard time shedding stress, because prior to the Unhinged Astromech, the only green maneuvers a Y-Wing could perform were a 1-straight or 2-straight, which meant if they were stressed, they became very predictable, or they didn't get to take any actions.
So Unhinged really changed the platform of the small base turret, where now a Y-Wing had a lot of maneuver options. And at Wave 6, we start to get some powerful turret options with the Auto Blaster turret. It wouldn't jump to Tier 1 until that Twin Laser turret came out, but Unhinged was a lot of the framework for why those ships are so powerful.
We also had another really important Y-Wing upgrade card that was released in Wave 6, the BTL A4 Y-Wing title. This was a 0-point Y-Wing only title that read, you cannot attack ships outside your firing arc. After you perform a primary weapon attack, you may immediately perform an attack with a turret secondary weapon. Essentially, what this upgrade card allowed you to do was fire with your primary and then shoot your turret secondary weapon, but suddenly you're just locked to that in-arc shot. The obvious benefit being you could up your damage potential while sacrificing some of the benefits of having a turret upgrade card.
And then if you pair that with the R3A2 Astromech, where once per triggered attack, you can give yourself a stress token to give your opponent a stress token as well. And so with the BTLA-4 title, now, if your target is in range of your turret in arc, you can perform your primary attack and your turret attack. Both of those will be able to trigger R3A2, causing a pretty efficient way to deal out 2 stress.
Now, at the time of release, the most efficient way you could do this was with an ion cannon turret, and that was limited to range 2. But in the next wave, we saw the release of Twin Laser Turret, which meant this range stretched all the way out to 3. And since you got to fire twice with Twin Laser Turret, it upped the damage potential of this ship too, making what we call the Stress Hog Y-Wing a pretty common force in Rebel lists. Hey listeners, time for a quick Patreon update. It's time to announce our August raffle winners.
Woohoo!
In order to be eligible for this raffle, you needed to have become a patron of Radio TCX by the end of the month of July. Don't worry, though. If you want to become a patron, we do a raffle every month, so become a patron now and you'll be eligible for our September raffle.
This month, we'll be giving away an Alt-Art Ray promo from the 2017 Worlds Championship, as well as a double R2-D2 and integrated Astromech fused card from the Star Wars 40th Anniversary Kit.
All right, so the winner of our Ray promo is James Brousseau from Colorado. Congratulations, James. And the winner of the R2-D2 Integrated Astromech upgrade card is Melker Gren from Sweden. Congratulations, Melker.
And thank you to all of our patron supporters. If you want to become a supporter of the show, please go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter today.
And now, back to the cast. So after the release of Wave 6, there's a pretty big wait time until we saw the next X-Wing release. It took about 6 months until the Imperial Raider was released on August 13th, 2015.
All right, this brought the Imperial faction into the great world of Epic, and I think is my favorite huge Epic ship. But for the importance of this podcast, it also gave us a few pretty powerful cards for regular play.
Probably the most notable of all these cards was the Emperor Palpatine crew card.
Yeah, his Royal Eminence, the rightful ruler of the galaxy, has probably the most powerful ability the game has yet seen.
Well, and this is an interesting one because it did receive a pretty heavy errata change later on. So let's look at the original version of the card first. Initially on its release, Emperor Palpatine was an 8-point double crew slot Imperial-only upgrade card that read, once per round, you may change a friendly ship's die result to any other die result. That die result cannot be modified again. Now, this is notably different from what the updated errata we saw relatively recently was, which changed the text to, once per round, before a friendly ship rolls dice, you may name a die result. After rolling, you must change one of your dice results to the named result. That die result cannot be modified again.
Right, so on release, very powerful ability. I mean, that's great modification, turning anything into the best result, whether that's a blank into an evade or a blank into a critical result on offense. But the real power of this was you got to decide when to use it when you needed it most. If you have Soontir Fel defended by the Emperor in a Lambda shuttle, then that one time where you blank out with Soontir or just don't get enough evades to keep yourself the vice active, Palpatine helped you out there. Combine that with an evade token, auto thrusters. It was very difficult to get through Soontir's defenses. Or a TIE Phantom that doesn't have auto thrusters. Palpatine functionally gave that ship a one-use auto thrusters a turn. So that was very powerful. And the other aspect is this range was unlimited. For a lot of comparable effects in the game, your ships need to be flying close to the origin of the support effect. But Palpatine's presence was across the whole board.
Well, and the cost of Palpatine, beyond its 8-point point cost, which I believe was the highest at the time of its release, the double crew slot limitation restricted this ship at the time to just the Lambda-class shuttle and the VT-49 Decimator. The most common use we saw on it was on a Lambda-class shuttle using the Omicron Group Pilot, which comes in at a base of 21 points, and then you just throw only Emperor Palpatine on there, bringing it up to 29 points. This ended up being the more or less most efficient way to run this upgrade card and get it into a squad with a couple powerful ace ships.
Right, that gave you 61 points to get two, maybe even three aces, and in many cases, a decent point bid if you wanted it.
Well, and what Emperor Palpatine really did was bring Imperial Ace ships to the forefront of the game. Suddenly, ships like Whisper or Soontir Fel were that much more powerful, even in an environment with a lot of large base turreted ships, where you could get very consistent modification, in the case of the Interceptor, with both an Auto Thrusters upgrade card as well as the Emperor Palpatine modification.
Right, and Palpatine was good enough to even make Darth Vader good, where Darth Vader's main weakness is more inconsistent defense compared to his other ace options. But with Palpatine boosting at, you get the advantage of Vader's high pilot skill, repositioning, and decent damage output.
What ended up happening, and there can be a lot of debate about this, is that he proved to be a little bit too efficient. Like Carson said before, it was a very reactionary upgrade card where you always got to see the die results before you decided whether or not to use Palpatine, which effectively meant he was 100% efficient. If you didn't have to use him on defense with your ace ships, then you could always use him to add a crit result to your shuttle's attack rolls.
Right, and so with the change, now the players have to decide which role is going to be the most necessary to use Palpatine on. So if a munition's being fired at your ace, you're probably going to want to use Palpatine there. Or if you have a key attack that needs to succeed to finish off an opponent, Palpatine's a great choice there. So now players have to really commit and decide where to use Palpatine. They did still keep the power of the global board presence, where he doesn't have to be near your other ace ships for his effects to trigger.
Backing up Palpatine in the Imperial Raider release, we saw a fix to the TIE Advanced. This is a ship that had struggled basically from the get-go. The two attack dice limitation is huge, and it was quickly outclassed by the TIE Interceptor in terms of offensive and defensive efficiency.
Right, the ship was costed like an X-Wing or other heavy fighters, but had a much lower damage output. But with the TIE X-1 title combined with the advanced targeting computer, its damage output got brought up to where its costing was.
So the TIE X-1 is a TIE Advanced-only title for 0 points that reads, your upgrade bar gains the system upgrade icon. If you equip a system upgrade, its squad point cost is reduced by 4 to a minimum of 0. So this was another squad point recosting upgrade, much like Chardin Refit. The difference here being is it didn't reduce the cost of the ship chassis. It actually just reduced the cost of upgrades. What this meant was is you could get a lot of those really cool system upgrades on the TIE Advanced, like advanced sensors or fire control system, effectively for free. Though the most common use we saw was with the advanced targeting computer upgrade card. Advanced targeting computer was a system upgrade that came in at quote-unquote 5 points for the TIE Advanced only, and it reads, when attacking with your primary weapon, if you have a target lock on the defender, you may add 1 crit result to your roll. If you do, you cannot spend target locks during this attack. Now, I say quote around the 5 point cost because obviously this is TIE Advanced only. If you're putting it on a TIE Advanced, your TIE Advanced must have the TIE X1 title, which means this upgrade is decreased by 4 points, bringing it down to a measly 1 point.
So here, if you're engaging in focus fire where your ship's just focusing on one target at a time, you really get rewarded with extra damage output. Take that target lock and then each attack until you finish that ship off, you get an extra critical result, which really does boost your ship's damage output. And then, because you're not going to be able to spend that target lock on offense, you're free to use your actions for defense.
Now, for a lot of TIE Advances, not being able to spend the target lock meant that oftentimes you just roll 1 hit result on your actual attack roll and then just add the crit result with the TIE Advanced targeting computer. The one ship that could get around this limitation was Darth Vader. Darth Vader has an elite pilot talent slot and a very high pilot skill, which meant you could get other ways to add offensive modifications beyond just spending a target lock.
Right, so Predator or Lone Wolf were great options on Darth Vader. You get that extra reroll because you can't spend a target lock, but if you have other ways to get rerolls, then you can really boost that damage output.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the Advanced Targeting Computer and the TIE X-1 title addressed the offensive issues that the TIE Advanced had. It still had persistent defensive issues, not having access to auto thrusters, and becoming very susceptible to twin laser turret when Wave 7 released shortly thereafter.
Right, just less than 2 weeks after the Raider came out, on August 25th, 2015... we got Wave 7 with the YV-666, the Kurax fighter, the K-Wing, and the TIE Punisher.
And with those ships, a slew of new upgrade cards.
Most of them focused on offense and ways to get damage through on ace ships.
So let's start off by looking at one of your favorite cards, Carson, Crackshot.
I think my favorite card. Crackshot is a 1-point elite pilot talent card that reads, when attacking a ship inside your firing arc, at the start of the compare results step, you may discard this card to cancel one of the defender's evade results.
Now, the first thing I'd mention is actually this is a card that also received an errata shortly after its release, because there needed to be some clarifications on the timing of when this ability triggered. I believe the initial FAQ said that this triggered when the attacker was modifying attack dice, which meant that it could really only cancel natural evade results, because after that, the defender would be able to spend focus or evade tokens in order to modify that defense further. We got a clarification and a rewrite of the wording to include the phrase compare results step so that this card actually triggers after both the attacker and defender have had a chance to modify die results.
So at face result, this card sort of reads deal 1 extra damage on one of your attacks. But the implication and threat of Crackshot cause it to be a lot more valuable than just that face value, where your opponent will often over defend to account for the threat of your activation of Crackshot, and then allow you to save your Crackshot if they overdefend and hold on to that threat.
Yeah, so let's look at a result here. Let's say you roll two hits on an attack with a ship with crack shot, and the defender rolls two evades and a focus. Suddenly, the defender has to make a decision here. Do I spend my focus token to add that third evade result to guarantee that you can't push any damage through with crack shot? Or do I leave my two evades compared to your two attack results where you can then spend that crack shot in order to push one damage through?
Right, and so crack shot has been most valuable in lists that incorporate volumes of firepower, whether that's aggressors using IGB's gunner effect or swarms of TIE fighters getting six attacks a turn, where if your opponent is forced to spend their defensive tokens suboptimally because of the threat of crack shots, then your subsequent attacks are going to be even more powerful. Looking at how the gunner effect works, if I get three or four hits on your A-ship and you're able to avoid the attack, but you're going to spend your tokens, that means there's going to be a second shot being fired at you where you're not going to have as good of defensive mods. And if you choose not to spend your tokens and let slip through one damage, then I can spend my crack shot and have you take an extra damage on top of that.
I also think crack shot's notable because it's one of the first, if not the first, upgrade cards to specifically reference a point in dice modification timing where it's specifying the compare result steps. We hadn't seen that happen on pretty much any cards prior to this release, and now that's become a lot more common of a card referencing a specific point in the timing flow of the game for when that card will trigger.
Right. A year later, we'd get a detailed timing chart, making cards that reference specific timing windows more prevalent. But before the advent of the timing chart, Crackshot was really the only card to reference that.
Well, and Crackshot was just the start of giving ships more options to push damage through high defense. We also saw the release of another very important X-Wing upgrade card.
Twin Laser Turret is a 6-point turret upgrade with range 2-3 and 3 attack dice that reads, attack, perform this attack twice, even against a ship outside your firing arc. Each time this attack hits, the defender suffers 1 damage, then cancels all dice results.
Now, this isn't the first time that we saw an upgrade card that allowed you to attack twice. We had prior to this the Cluster Missiles upgrade card, which had exactly the same wording in performing an attack twice. And then, of course, we also had the BTLA-4 Y-Wing, which allowed you to attack twice, albeit with different weapons. But the wording here is exactly the same as it is on Cluster Missiles. The reason Twin Laser Turret is notable is that it's an ability that you could use multiple times throughout a game.
Right, so the design philosophy of this card was that low attack dice ships were having a hard time pushing damage through on high agility ships. So giving them a high dice attack, 3 attack dice, and the ability to perform it twice meant there was a pretty good chance that at least some damage would get through. And then this was, quote-unquote, balanced by the ability to just deal 1 damage per attack.
Yeah, one of the most important design limitations in X-Wing is that accuracy and damage are tied together. The more accurate a ship is, the more likely it is to do a lot of damage. There's not a good way to differentiate that. So let's say I have a ship like the TIE Phantom, which rolls 4 attack dice, and then you can get some modification from fire control system or focus tokens. That ship's going to be a lot more accurate in that it's going to be able to hit a ship, likely, because of its glut of modifications and attack dice. At the same time, it's also a lot more likely than other ships to do a lot of damage from those attacks as well, since you have so many attack dice. What Twin Laser Turret tried to do was balance that out, where it made it very likely that you were going to hit your target because you're rolling a lot of attack dice and you're getting to attack multiple times, but that damage is limited to just 1 per shot, max 2 for both volleys from Twin Laser Turret.
The other side effect of Twin Laser Turret was that it was actually very good against low agility ships as well.
Yeah, since you're rolling 3 attack dice, you are almost guaranteed to do damage against ships with 0 or 1 agility.
Right, and so ships like the Falcon using the evade from the Millennium Falcon title and C-3PO's ability made it really good at evading 1 attack a turn, but with each Twin Laser Turret in the list providing 2 attacks, it really made it very difficult for Falcons to survive in an environment with a lot of Twin Laser Turrets.
Twin Laser Turret synergized really well with a lot of other upgrade cards. We mentioned before R3A2 and the BTLA4 Y-Wing title, where you could get that Stress Hog Y-Wing out there for a pretty low point cost and deal out multiple stress to a ship in a turn. You also had cards like Tactician, which when attacking ships at range 2, it could deal a stress to those ships after the attack, which meant that since you were firing twice, you'd get to add a stress twice.
Right, and this was later changed to break up that trigger on the twin laser turret, but that wasn't until a year later.
Another really important and influential upgrade card that came in Wave 7 was the Extra Munitions Torpedo upgrade card. Now, this isn't actually a torpedo in the traditional sense, but it gives you access to even more ordnance and allows you your ordnance cards like torpedoes, missiles, and bombs to be a lot more efficient for their point cost. Extra Munitions is a 2-point torpedo upgrade card that is limited. When you equip this card, place one ordnance token on each equipped torpedo, missile, and bomb upgrade card. When you are instructed to discard an upgrade card, you may discard one ordnance token on that card instead.
Now, in X-Wing, ordnance is pretty expensive, usually ranging between 3 to 6 points. And then each other munition you take on top of that, you're paying the full value for that again. Extra Munitions gives you at least your second copy only costs 2 points. And then each other munition you upgrade after that, and you get 2 for the price of 1.
So before Extra Munitions, if you wanted to have 2 proton torpedoes, you need a ship with 2 torpedo slots, and you'd have to pay the cost twice. So a proton torpedo costs 4 points. You'd have to pay that twice for a total of 8 points. What happened after this fact was that Extra Munitions could take the place of one of those torpedoes, but give you the same effect as having 2. So you could just take 1 proton torpedo for 4 points, and then have your Extra Munitions for 2, meaning the net cost of your 2 proton torpedoes would be 6 instead of 8, which is really important when you have just 100 points to play with in a standard squad.
Right, so this, on any ship with at least 1 torpedo slot and then any munition slot, be it another torpedo slot, missile, bomb slot, gave them a really powerful way to double up on munitions. It usually doesn't see use where you're taking more than one other munitions card, just because even with extra munitions, you don't want to have your ship cost more in upgrades than it does at its base value, and munitions can quickly get you there. There's some exceptions to that, where the K-Wing, having so many munition upgrade slots in a decent defensive chassis, can really use both a missile and bombs and use its torpedo slot for extra munitions quite well.
Yeah, what extra munitions did was really pave the way for ordnance lists. We had things like the triple contracted scouts list, which was very oppressive when Wave 8 released. A lot of that's due to their ability to take multiple torpedoes thanks to the extra munitions card. We also saw it pave the way for a more bomb-heavy metagame, which is what we have now, because we also saw the release of 3 very influential bombs in Wave 7, the Connernet, the Ion Bombs, and the Cluster Mines, all up the efficiency of bomb tokens in the game. And that was compounded by the fact that extra munitions let you double up on these upgrade cards.
Yeah, and most ships only got 1 bomb slot, so extra munitions allowing you to carry 2 bombs definitely made bomber-class ships more useful.
So there you have it, the most influential and important upgrade cards from basically Wave 5 to Wave 7. Obviously, there's a lot more to talk about. We have several more waves of X-Wing to discuss, so we will cover that all in an upcoming episode where we'll close out our little series on upgrade cards.
Yeah, I think it's fun. It's really interesting to look back retrospectively and see how the game has evolved over the course of the years.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please consider going on to facebook.com/radiotcx and liking our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why others should listen.
This week, we want to give a special shout out to Cy Trooper, who said the show was short and sweet and to the point, and like that we don't stray off course.
Thanks, Cy Trooper, and a big thank you to everyone else who's left us a review on iTunes. It really means a lot to us.
And if you want to support the show directly and be eligible for our monthly raffles, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.